percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
And it's Wendy's Coffee House. Oh, wow. This is a pre-record. I usually don't do that, but I'm telling you ahead of time, because the guest that I am introducing had a major health crisis, and she had a stroke. She's recovering, and at one point, she was pretty much incapacitated to have somebody else follow up on her Facebook page. We interviewed her earlier this year about crop circles. Nancy Talbot is a researcher with BLT Research. Fascinating subject and fascinating content. And talking about cognitive dissonance and how hard it is to get over sometimes believing or not believing that something that you are so ingrained, something that's so ingrained in your thinking, and then you find out maybe you've been thinking about it wrong the entire time. That happens when you run into a ghost, let me tell you. So for people who go up to the Westin Ghost Tours and then have an encounter, and specifically the candle shop, where recently there was an encounter with a ghost, and the guy who was a skeptic said, no, this is a bunch of hooey. No way. So the story, I told it before, Jeff, who's the proprietor there, he said he was in the other room, but he heard this crash as the guy's in the outer sales room, and the guy's standing right there as this candle fell off the shelf right by his feet, took about 5 feet leap off of the counter to the floor in front of him. One of those moments you just love to have been there to see the expression. So anyway, the guy didn't say a whole lot more after that. Case in point. So there you go. But that's what happens with crop circles. People who go there have these incredible experiences, and they say, well, okay, fine. You can say it's fake. You can say it's phony. And some are. But the ones that leave you questioning, and the ones that that they don't have explanations for, because this has been going on long before, well, Dave and Jay or Bill and Bob, whoever was out there supposedly with those big planks making all these fake crop circles, before they were born. So that's a cool thing about this. So Nancy will be talking about that in the show. I also wanted to go over Russell Brinegar, the guy I talked about. He's the one who had the heart attack. He was out mowing the lawn, had the heart attack. And then what happened with that was he knew that he was having it. He shifted from being alive to not quite there and had an encounter with himself, his higher self. And so with that, changed his whole life because he had this incredible experience. And then he wrote the book, and it's called Overlords of the Singularity. Okay, he gave me chapter 4, so I put excerpts of that on Wendy's Coffee House. Check that out. And he talks about the one that I got to share, talks about AI, artificial intelligence. And it's really fascinating the way he pulls all these dots together and makes a few connections that involve the potential of maybe the ETs are programming us and helping us and have had something to do with our evolution. So that's on the Wendy's Coffee House blog. So check out, that's part of chapter four. And then the other thing we're talking about, too, is that incredible mine in Arkansas that has some kind of paranormal activity going on. The Travel Channel will be doing a special on that in October. But you can check out that. The link to that is also on Wendy's Coffee House, too. So just catching up. And then People of Earth, of course, is back on now. Darn, I missed the first show. I know, I'm pre-recording, and I know I missed the first show because I don't have cable. So anyway, I will catch up with that. And the other one that looks like fun, The Orville, coming to Fox. It looks like a spoof, kind of like Galaxy Quest. I don't know. We'll find out. In the meantime, all sorts of fun stuff happening. And if you want to keep up, just check out the links on Wendy's Coffee House. In the meantime, you're going to listen to Nancy Talbot here, again, a rebroadcast of this show. And wish Nancy well. She's back up. I know recently I saw a few posts on Facebook, so I know she is connecting, but just not back up to full speed yet. So thank you for tuning in, and enjoy the show. And then we've got some other good shows coming up, too. You can check out the preview list on the schedule page. Yeah, okay, I need to practice. I'm just so not used to doing these pre-records. It's annoying. So it's a good show, all right? Stick around. More coming up next on Wendy's Coffee House. Okay. We're going to shift gears because this stuff happens. Yeah? You never know when you're going to run into a paranormal anomaly. And if you're around a guy named Robert, it happens a lot. But Nancy Talbot was already doing crop circles research for years with a guy named Levengood. Nancy, I'm so glad you're available to talk about this stuff because this is a great time to get into this with everything that's going on. So thank you. Thank you for taking time to connect.
You're welcome. It is a real pleasure on my part. The only problem being that the one television show of the entire week that I like happens to run at exactly the same time.
That is not fair. What's your show?
Madam Secretary, I love it.
Oh. Okay, Nancy, you're going to have to get the download.
Anyhow, I'm delighted to be on and have some very interesting things that I wanted to talk about, some of which I've not spoken about publicly at all. So where do you want to start with our cognitive dissonance discussion?
Okay, well, first we're going to explain why we got off on that tangent, because I think that's a perfect intro with the cognitive dissonance, because of the stuff you and I believe and that we've talked about and that you've had experience with. And it's on the fringe, on the edge, and some, you know, far fringe. But that doesn't mean it isn't possible and it isn't experienceable. So with the cognitive dissonance has to do with it's tough to believe things that are outside your own whatever it is, paradigm, your own mindset, and
your own experience, your own belief system, all of those things. All of us, of course, depending on where we were born and raised and whatever, develop an outlook, a point of view, a basic concept of reality that tends to, as we grow older, you tend to look for things that actually reinforce that concept or idea. Very few people search for things that would stretch it or enlarge it. And as we go along in life, we periodically, almost everybody, runs into something, usually lots of somethings, that challenge those original ideas, but which seem reasonable, you know, something worth thinking of. And what we find in psychology is that when people are faced with two very different, separate ideas, both of which seem to be important, one of which they may have lived with most of their lives, but something new that comes in that has supportive evidence which they take seriously, but is at total odds with everything they thought before, mm-hmm. That is what causes what we call cognitive dissonance. It's this terrible difficulty in the brain where you're trying to make the two fit and you can't find a way to make that happen.
Okay. Now, you've been with BLT Research, which studied crop circles. Now, that, again, that's going to be...
Which studies scientifically crop circles. That's the critical point here.
Okay.
The idea... For the first 10 years of my involvement in the circle phenomenon was studying with scientists, bona fide professional scientists, the plants and soils, looking for changes, you know, abnormalities in them that would help us understand the energies involved in creating them. And the first 10 years or so, that was my absolute basic focus. And we were discovering, as you know, all kinds of physical changes to the plants and soils that could not be caused by mechanical flattening with planks and boards, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then here we are publishing scientific papers about all this and feeling like we're beginning to have some understanding of this strange phenomenon. And into my life walks... This is my cognitive dissonance walking smack into my face when I got a call from the Netherlands about, at that time, a very young boy, 16, 17 years old at the time, who was watching, had seen multiple crop circles form underneath light bulbs. And the science work, you see, did not involve light bulbs.
No, not at all.
And it was... I didn't take it seriously at first. I mean, I made notes about it. There was a good field worker who had called me, but I didn't really pay attention until the following year, which was 1997, I got another call from the same field worker telling me that this kid, Robert Vandenbroek, had a huge light ball approach the balcony of his house. The house backs up to a farm field, and there's a little balcony off of his bedroom on the second floor. And he and his sister had been up there in the room listening to music or something, and this huge ball of light appeared, scared them half to death. They went running downstairs to get the parents. They come back up. The ball of light's gone, but there's this pile of white powder sitting on the balcony floor outside the doors. Doors are glass. And when they went out onto the balcony, they could see that the eaves overhanging the balcony and the outsides of the doors had burn marks and, you know, this pile of white powder. And so the way I got involved in all of this was that the parents, who were very typical, you know, middle-class family, not into bizarre things at all, wanted that white powder analyzed. They wanted to know what it was.
Yeah.
And so we were called because we have the scientists who can do the analysis, and we did the analysis, and I sent the paper back, the results back to the father. And the next year, I was in Amsterdam doing a series of lectures in Europe about our work and met the parents because they came to the lecture in Amsterdam with Robert. And that was the beginning, because what happened immediately after the lecture, it just happened that I did go and stay with them. I had a couple of days before I had to do my next lecture. And the father, who was a bank manager, these are, you know, very serious, regular people, had asked me if I would come and spend a couple days, if I could, because they were so upset. They were so worried about the things that they had been witnessing, and they wanted explained, and thinking that because of my connections with the science world, that I might be able to help with this, they wanted me to come and visit. And I did. And the very first night in that house, the beginning of my personal dealings with cognitive dissonance occurred. The parents and I had this funny feeling not to go to bed. I'm a night person anyhow. I wrote it off completely to the fact that I'm a night person, and I just wasn't sleepy yet. But I had a very strong sense not to go to bed. And the parents, who were perfect hosts, they wouldn't go to bed either, of course, until I did.
You're keeping everybody up.
You know, that's not polite. So the three of us were sitting downstairs in the living room, which is at the back of the house, facing out and onto a small garden behind which is the farm field. And we were simply chatting. It was around 2 o'clock in the morning, I think, and suddenly, they were telling me about various things that had been going on around Robert that I hadn't heard about, and all of which were very strange. But I had no reason not to believe them. I was just listening. And suddenly, this tingling started around my waist, around my entire body, but at my waist, I was sitting in a chair. And it started moving up my back and my front and my arms, getting more intense as it did. And when it got to up to my neck, it had become really uncomfortably intense, might be the way to put it. I got scared. I mean, I didn't know what it was. I'd never felt anything like that before. And in my mind, I didn't say this out loud. In my mind, I thought, the hell with science, I'm getting out of here.
And what does his parents do? Are they feeling the same thing?
Well, yeah, I'll get there. So before I could say anything, the instant I had that thought in my mind, the tingling stopped completely. And this light show then ensued in the garden, where there were flashes of light and balls of light and drops of light and chains of light all going on simultaneously. big light bulbs, little light bulbs, white ones, blue ones, various other colors, flashes like flash bulbs going off. It's like a three-ring circus out there. And I was completely mesmerized, like, oh, my goodness, I've never seen anything like that. I mean, fireworks I've seen, but I've never seen anything like that.
No.
And it lasted for 10, 15 seconds, and then it stopped. Nobody had said a word by now. Nobody had said a thing. Turns out later, I'll tell you, the father was terrified. Parents kept sitting there, and I turned my chair more towards, you know, to watch this closer, and the tingling started again. And it slowly built up my body, built up, got to my neck, starts to be very bloody intense.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm thinking, okay, I'm out of here. And as I have that thought, at the instant, again, the tingling stops and the light show starts again.
Wow.
This scenario repeated itself. We're not positive whether it was 5 times or 7 times. I did happen to check my watch. The whole thing took 11 minutes.
Okay.
And there would be 15, 20 seconds of the tingling thing. Then there would be 15, 20, maybe 30 seconds of the light show, which in every case would suddenly just stop. And since nobody was speaking, nobody spoke a word during the entire thing, the only thing I did differently was I got up from my chair and stood up against the glass. These are floor-to-ceiling glass doors that bow out into the patio. And I was looking up, trying to see where in the heck all this stuff was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have quite the guts to go outside.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But this thing went on, and then all of a sudden, the last one of them occurred. I have absolutely no idea how I knew it was the last time, but I turned around to Mr. and Mrs. Vandenbroek and said, like God talking, that's it, it's over. And they both looked at me, and I looked at them. I was like, oh, my God, what has just happened here? Well, I know enough to, I wanted to find out if they had experienced the same thing I had. So I separated them really quickly before we spoke about any of it, and I asked the mother independently to describe to me what she had experienced. Then I asked the father, and it turns out that all three of us apparently experienced exactly the same event. We saw it. We all had the tingling. We all saw the lights, and it appears in the same fashion. So that was my introduction to some of the kinds of things that go on around Robert.
Okay. Yeah, and we're getting close to a break here, so I want to break it. You also said you had some information that you've never talked about before.
I have several things that I've not spoken about before at all.
Okay, and that's the tease, all right? Because this stuff, that's the thing. Some of this contact experience and the UFO experience has a lot of paranormal activity in conjunction with it. And the more people are sharing their stories, the more we're finding out that that's also a big part of the equation. So, Nancy, hang on a little bit, but if you're listening, this is Nancy Talbot. She works with BLT Research, and she's had a lot of experience dealing with the crop circle phenomenon in terms of researching why the stalks are bent a certain way. And you can tell the difference. Can you tell the difference between one that is manufactured or man-made versus one
that's... Not easily. There's quite a bit of lab work that has to be done, but we can tell the difference, yes.
Okay. All right. So that's one of the things that does make a difference, having somebody research this kind of stuff. Anyway, so stick around. And if you're listening right now and you miss any of the show, you can always catch it on Wendy's Coffee House. We do a podcast, and that airs a little bit later. But this stuff is becoming so much more fascinating because we're finding it's not just a crop circle. There's more to it. There's something else going on, and whatever is producing it sometimes can be seen, and Robert is the first one I had heard about who actually was almost producing it just by being available or in the vicinity. It would show up, and that's why Nancy's an important part of this equation because she gets to talk about it, and we want to hear more. So stick around. Nancy Talbot is my guest. Again, more crop circle and paranormal phenomena on Wendy's Coffee House next. So Sometimes you can't explain things, and they continue to happen even without explanation, because maybe there isn't one. Put a quote on the Coffee House website, and it seems to be all sorts of appropriate, given what's going on. There are known knowns. There are things we know that we know. There are known unknowns. That is to say, there are things that we know we don't know. But there are also unknown unknowns. There are things we don't know we don't know. Donald Rumsfeld is the source for the quote. And this is the stuff we don't know until we experience it. And when Nancy Talbot was sharing the story about what was happening with this experience at Robert's house, and what I thought was so fantastic was we didn't know, and we still don't know how it's happening, but we didn't know that the crop circle formula also included the paranormal activities in a house, like the stuff that Nancy's describing in terms of that vibration, that stuff that she was feeling in conjunction with the crop circle activity happening. And at that point, Nancy, was a crop circle being formed at that time?
No. Let me restructure this tiny little bit here.
Perfect.
The association with the crop circle phenomenon directly is that Robert is the only person yet known in the world who knows when and where they're going to come. He feels when they're coming. Usually, now he knows usually almost always where and what they're going to look like before they appear. But he doesn't always know when. Sometimes he knows as they're forming. Sometimes he knows a few seconds before. Sometimes right afterward. But that was the first connection of him to the circle phenomenon. What we, almost everyone in the circle phenomenon who has studied it seriously, knows that there is a causative agency and suspects that that causative agency has a consciousness. We do not necessarily, I in particular, and Robert and many others, do not in any way think of this as paranormal. There are aspects of normal reality that humans do not yet understand.
And this I agree. Yeah, I like that definition.
Has something to do, we believe, more with the nature of consciousness, which is not yet understood at all, and also with a spiritual aspect that is not yet currently or not commonly currently understood in Western societies. All right, be all that as it may, the next morning, because my background was from the scientific standpoint, I'd worked at Harvard as a research analyst, I'd worked at the University of Maryland in that capacity, my involvement in the circle phenomenon for the first 10 years was nothing but straightforward scientific work with plants and soils, trying to figure out the energies involved and get some sort of idea of what might be causing all this. Then these events start to happen around. I'm allowed to perceive and observe some of this stuff that's going on with this Dutch kid. The next morning, after this event with the lights, my very first instinct was to go to three trees. There were three standing spruce trees on the side of their patio from which many of these lights the night before appeared to emanate, to come out of.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I wanted to do, in daylight, mind you, was to examine those trees really carefully.
Chicken, yeah.
No, I'm looking for, is there a setup?
I meant the daylight part of it.
That's been set up to show me, you know, am I being tricked here?
Yes, yes.
And so I went out very carefully and examined those damn trees within an inch of their lives. And there was absolutely nothing abnormal or unusual. As I was out there, on the back of the house, I noticed a small birdhouse, which Robert had apparently made as a child, and his parents had put up, you know, a birdhouse. And the thing had a metal roof on it. Well, it turns out that when this ball of light incident in 1997 had occurred, and I'm there now in 1998, among the burns that had occurred on the eaves and the outside of the doors upstairs, this burn mark had also appeared on the roof of the birdhouse.
Whoa.
Which they told me as they were with me while I'm examining the trees. I saw the birdhouse and noticed it and asked about this, and they told me. And so I decided that I wanted to take some photos to document all of this, and I aimed the camera at the birdhouse, and I think I took one shot that was a real shot. And then the camera started taking shots all by itself, where I wasn't touching it.
Yeah.
It ran through. I had a brand new roll of film. It took, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 shots. And then it ran through the entire rest of the film, exposing it, with me not touching a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was hanging by its strap at this point. And when I got home and was able to develop that film, we found those were the first of my of the photo anomalies that I took, that, you know, I myself took,
mm-hmm.
or my camera took, in the presence of Robert Vandenbroek. He wasn't actually with us outside when I was doing this examination. He was somewhere else inside. His parents and I were outside in the back doing this examination. Well, the next year, I had to, you know, after this, I had to move on to do the next lecture in Belgium or wherever I was going. But the next year, I went back, and from then on, I would come every summer and spend time living in Robert's house to learn more. And the following year, during the interim, a man, an Indian man from Virginia, the tribe had originated in Virginia, and he was half Indian or maybe full-blood, I don't know. He had found a bunch of quartz-like crystals somewhere in a dry street, a creek bed, which he said, called me on the telephone, that he told me he had been guided to find. He had dug in a place he'd been told to dig. He had found this cache of crystals, and he was then instructed that he was to give them to certain people, and I was one of them. Now, I didn't know this man, never met him. I never did meet him, but he sent me this crystal. And I thought, oh, this is so strange. I mean, my frame of reference was not this sort of stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it happened I had the crystal with me when I went back to Roberts the next summer. And so I decided on a little experiment. I put it in a thin plastic bag, like a sandwich bag.
Yeah.
And I tied it to another tree that was in the backyard of Robert's house in this little garden. And I did this in broad daylight. And I hung in the tree waiting to see, thinking, well, gee, maybe something will happen. Maybe these light bulbs or energies or something will recognize that I'm at least acknowledging their existence. And I stood out there for, I don't know, 20 minutes, half an hour watching. Nothing happened. I got bored, went inside, and I had went upstairs to take a bath. Well, I had apparently no sooner gotten in the bathtub than Robert's mother and his younger sister, both of whom were downstairs in the kitchen where they could clearly see this tree, suddenly saw a bolt of light go shooting down from the sky. And this is broad daylight, probably 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, shooting right down to this crystal. It cut exactly around the crystal. It cut exactly the shape of the crystal out of one side of that plastic bag, just enough to allow the crystal itself to fall out onto the grass.
Wow.
The other side of the plastic bag was not touched. The crystal itself was fine. It was, and there is simply a hole. I haven't even written this up, but I will do this sometime soon. And, I mean, I didn't see the light tube come and hit it, but both his mother and his sister, they came running up the bathroom to get me to tell me about this.
That's incredibly precise.
The precision of it, and when you think of, I mean, the thinness of, you know, what a sandwich bag is like.
Mm-hmm. It didn't burn it?
Didn't burn it at all. It simply etched this exact outline of the shape of the crystal itself and allowed the crystal to then fall onto the ground.
That's impressive.
So that's the second incident, or third, because by now the film thing has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, in 2001, I get to see these tubes of light form the crop circle. Now, it's important to note that in the first incident in 1998, where the light show, the tingling and the light show happened, when that was over, both parents said to me, that was for you. I absolutely did not believe it. My very first reaction, my only reaction, was that that was a romantic interpretation, that in fact this was an extremely odd event, but that it was location-specific. I was identifying it as simply occurring in a very specific location, but in no way took it as having anything to do with me.
Okay.
Then we come to, you know, this thing shooting down into the little crystal, and again, they told me, that's for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was your crystal.
And I'm thinking, nah. It was drawn to the crystal.
Cognitive
dissonance. The light phenomena, whatever it is,
yes,
was drawn just to the crystal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then in 2001, you know, Robert and I are there, and I don't know that I've told the story on your particular show or not, but we both observed after me being, the two of us had been out in the field all day long doing work for with geomagnetic and electromagnetic work for Dr. William Roll. And I was looking for these magnetic anomalies in crop circles that had occurred already that summer.
Mm-hmm.
And we had found nothing, absolutely nothing. And I had hauled this damn equipment all over the place. I was tired. I was annoyed because we'd gotten nothing, no data that gave us any information.
Mm-hmm.
So I was real, I was just annoyed.
Done, yeah.
And this particular night, we were it was near the end of my stay. Robert wanted to go back out into the fields and take photos in crop circles because he was by then getting these very unusual photos. I was so ticked off. I said, no, I'm sick and tired of this phenomenon. It's too hard to study. Why can't it be more direct? I'm going to bed. And I marched myself up to, I was staying at that time in his bedroom at the back of the house. It was hot as it could be. I'd open these floor-to-ceiling glass doors to let the fresh air in, got into the bed, and it faces directly out through these floor-to-ceiling glass doors, looking out over their little garden and then to these huge farm fields. And it wasn't, you know, but a few minutes before, I heard the cattle bellowing down at the end of the lane. We know from hundreds of interviews I've done with farmers and landowners all over the world who have crop circles that if they have cows, if they have cattle or horses or dogs, the animals will get upset and carry on.
Okay.
And so when
okay.
I heard that,
Nancy,
I thought, oh
hold on,
my, something's getting...
We're going to take a break, okay, because the cowbell's a perfect time, all right?
Okay.
It's kind of like a little trigger. I wish I had a cowbell.
Okay.
We can do the sound effect. Okay, if you're listening, you'll just have to imagine because we come back. We're going to pick up with the cowbell, all right, with Nancy Talbot on Wendy's Coffee House. Okay, I didn't have a cowbell. But this is kind of magical. Okay, Nancy, you can...
It is kind of magical. When I heard the cows bellowing, I knew, I suspected, because I've been told this by literally hundreds of different farmers and whatever. But for some reason, I was going to get up and go stand on the balcony because I figured I could see whatever. But for some reason, I didn't. The cattle became quiet. I continued to read, and then the cattle began again very raucously, and I knew at that moment that something was getting ready to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to get up. I was going to swing my legs out of bed and get out on that balcony. Before I could do it, this brilliant, about 2 foot in diameter, absolutely straight tube of light with incredible force came shooting down into that field, right smack into this bean field, as close to my bed as you could get in growing crop.
Whoa.
And wham, it comes down, lit up the place like daylight, lit up the bedroom I was in like I was on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure where the light was going. And again, we're talking only a couple of instants, and I think it stopped. There's no noise. There's no anything else. And I thought, my God, did that really happen? And before I can even think to ask the question, wham, here comes another one, and then a third. Well, Robert was downstairs in the kitchen, and those windows look out in the same direction, and he was watching this too. And after the second one, he starts yelling for me because he's hoping, of course, that I'm seeing this too.
Absolutely, yeah.
And he comes running up the steps to get me, so he missed the third one, but I saw all three. And we went immediately out to the balcony to look up to see what these were coming from. And nothing. It was a perfectly normal-looking sky.
Mm-hmm.
So we ran downstairs, and I grabbed a torch, a flashlight, and Robert was positive that, you know, there was a new crop circle right there. I was too scared to step out, frankly. The force involved in those tubes of light was amazing.
Yeah.
But he finally did step out, and then he didn't get fried, so I went too. And we went to only 85, 90 feet to the back of this little garden, and there's a fence, a wire fence, and I shone the flashlight over. And as close as you could get, and in direct line with my bed, was a brand new crop circle. It was an ellipse, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And off the northern end of it went a capital letter T. Clear as a bell.
Wow.
And Robert looked at me, he said, that one was for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And again, I thought, no way. Absolutely no. I mean, I didn't understand it. I had no explanation for it. But the idea at that time that such a thing could occur literally to show me whatever it's showing me,
yes,
it was outside my ability to conceive of. I simply thought that was a romantic interpretation of what I had just seen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the point I'm making here is that in those early days, in those many early, there are many, many constantly occurring experiences, I've been working with Robert now 20 years or so,
yeah,
and it took the first 10 with that sort of experience constantly. Robert and me sitting in at a special field of his where he's seen things before, talking one night about the colors blue and aquamarine.
Oh, wow.
And then suddenly the energies are present. He perceives them. He knows they're there.
Mm-hmm.
He asks if he can use my camera. It's always my camera. I'm standing right with him, and I'm watching every single thing he does. And we got out of the car. We started to walk along the top of the dike. All I knew was that he had said the energies were present. He could feel them. Then he starts to shoot, and what comes on the camera? Blue, this beautiful, beautiful white light, brilliant white light, surrounded by an aquamarine light, surrounded by blue.
Wow.
Exactly what we had just been talking about for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Like something new.
This sort of thing. Now, we were talking about the colors just because we have... I don't know why we were talking about the colors, because we like them.
Mm-hmm.
It was that simple. We weren't trying to make anything happen. We weren't even thinking about anything happening. We were simply conversing about colors we liked.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, here comes this image, or multiple, there were 40 or 50 shots, that seemed to indicate that something heard what we were talking about, blue and aquamarine.
Yeah.
And that something was deliberately showing us, in this case probably me, that it did hear, it was there, it heard what we were talking about, and it was letting us know by giving us those colors back. That sort of thing has happened so many times that maybe someone a little less dense than I would have gotten it faster, but it took me about 10 years before I could really accept what I was seeing with my eyes. Pictures of my own deceased brother appearing on my camera while I'm standing with Robert, watching him take them,
mm-hmm,
2 months after my brother died. The events go on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And eventually you get to the point, or I got to the point, where I can accept that it is real because I've seen it so many times. I'd have to be, deaf, dumb, blind, and stupid to not see that this is a real something.
I would, as stubborn.
As stubborn beyond belief.
Yeah.
Incredibly stubborn.
Yeah.
And now, of course, the thing is to understand better, if possible, what does it mean? There are lots of ways you could interpret all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, once you know that it's genuine, I mean, I've watched Robert take some 4,000 or 5,000 anomalous images of deceased people, of creatures, of UFOs, of light phenomena, you name it, and I've seen it with my camera and me watching him. I know he's not faking them. And, you know, all this other stuff that happens, you know, I've been with him when suddenly he'll come running into my room and say, we got to go, there's a crop circle coming. And he'll tell me, we have to drive in that direction. He doesn't know exactly where, but just drive. He doesn't drive, so I have to drive him. And we go, and he'll tell me, we're looking for a barn that looks like, or we're looking for a street sign that says. We go to whatever the place is. We find it. We stop the car. We get out. And sure enough, every single time, there's a crop circle right there.
Nancy, I got 4 minutes at the most. So is there anything, the important stuff you want to add?
Yeah, it is simply that I understand why it is. I clearly understand how difficult it is for people who have not had the benefit of such experiences to understand that they are, that they can be real. They're not always, I guess, but they can be.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, that through this, slowly, I not only have come to accept that there is a consciousness external to Robert and me, which he's insisted from the beginning, and I personally have come absolutely to the idea, to the feeling that it is a spiritual consciousness, a spiritually enlightened consciousness might be the way to put it, that is of the source of what many people call God, the Almighty, you know, whatever the name is, the concept is, but I feel that it is of that source, that whatever this is comes with that same loving concern for mankind and for and has the desire for humankind to recognize and live more deeply that aspect of life, that part of what we call life, the spiritual part.
Do you find yourself thinking in different ways now as a result?
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, I know. We don't have enough time, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, you don't have enough time, but oh, yes. It's a life changer as you begin to understand the how large reality is, how much larger it is than you ever thought. As you begin to understand that, It's a complete game changer.
Now, you're able to have these experiences without Robert around?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they things have happened in my life long before I met him, but nothing that nailed it, ran it home the way with the stuff around him. And it continues around him. He and I tonight had a conversation that is so moving that I'm still kind of coping with it, processing it myself. There are some beautiful, beautiful stuff available to humans who will look for it, who can look for it, who are brave enough to go for it and trust their intuition, trust their inner knowing that there is a source, energy, consciousness, and that it is loving.
Even with all the chaos, there's still that wonderful sense of there's something else, something bigger, something so much more fantastic than what we're experiencing.
So much richer. So much richer, and you have to look for it. You have to be sincere. You have to work at it. You have to fight for it. But if you do, it's there.
Are you going to write about this?
It can change your life.
Are you going to write about it, Nancy?
I write about it constantly. I hope people go to my Facebook page. I am the Nancy Talbot in Cambridge, Massachusetts, when you go on Facebook, or go to the BLT Research website, which is just simply bltresearch.com, BLT like the sandwich.
Got it. Hey, you, thanks for joining us tonight. I really appreciate your information. If you're listening now, check out, we've got the podcast. It'll be uploaded, and you can connect with it at KCMO or Wendy's Coffee House. In the meantime, yeah, follow along. Nancy's got some phenomenal stories, also some video and some background on Robert so you can find out more, because this continues to happen. It isn't stopping, And the cool thing is, once you get past that cognitive dissonance, there's a whole lot more that you can enjoy and stop fighting that bigger reality that's right here. Till next time, stay curious, keep it positive, and hang in there. See ya.